Thursday night football. It's the Bengals and the Ravens. Coming up on Sunday, Packers host the L.A. Chargers up at Lambeau. The Bears beat the Lions in Detroit. Both are noon starts. And Kenosha's Betsy Yade will be singing the national anthem at the Packer game on Sunday. In the NHL tonight, the Blackhawks skate against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for Thursday, the 16th. Partly sunny, windy, and mild. A high of 66. Southwest winds up to 35 miles per hour. Current numbers, wind south at 8. 53 degrees Racine. 48 for Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today is the monthly visit of our good friend Nan Calvert, offering up yet another environmentally themed program. And she has engaged for this program today a special guest who is on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, Shannon Davis-Faust. We'll introduce her in just a moment. But first, Nan Calvert, we welcome you back to the program.
Thank you. Very glad to be here, as always.
So tell us what prompted you to issue this invitation to Professor Davis-Faust to join us today.
Well, not too long ago, Wild Ones, the Fox Valley chapter, was promoting Dr. Davis-Faust's class called, it's all about connecting people with nature. And I thought, that sounds really intriguing to me because that's really the crux of it, you know. We live very disconnected from the natural world for a lot of different reasons. And that causes a lot of environmental problems. And it stems really from apathy. We're so disconnected, we're apathetic about it. We don't realize how important it is to live within nature instead of, you know, thinking we're outside of it. And those of us who've done environmental education for a long time know that if you can just spark that moment of connection in someone, you can often inspire them then to move towards action, to really care about something, whatever that something might be. And so I thought it would be really important to have her on the show to talk about this and tell everybody about it and you know, the whys and wherefores of it.
Very good. A wonderful idea, and I'm so glad it's happening. So we welcome via the telephone Shannon Davis-Faust, who teaches at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, where she is a senior lecturer in biology and environmental studies. She's also coordinator of something called the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program. And she is also an affiliate of something called SIRT, S-I-R-T, the Sustainability Institute for Regional Transformations. And I'm anxious to ask her about all of that. And then more specifically, talking about a lovely course called Finding Your Connection with Nature that promises to be a really powerful experience for all those who take advantage of that opportunity. So Shannon Davis-Faust, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg and Nan, for having me. I'm super excited to be here today.
Before we get into kind of the specific matters at hand, I think it would be great for us to learn a little bit more about you, about where you come from originally, and in terms of your earlier life, what clues there might be of the professional life that you would ultimately undertake. I mean, at what point and for what reasons did you become interested in the natural world around you and in this whole notion of sustainability?
Oh, yes, thank you. Well, I started actually as a child, I gravitated towards nature. While my friends were playing with Barbie dolls, I was out climbing trees and making forts and connecting with nature myself. I didn't get that from my parents. My parents didn't like nature too much. They never took me camping or anything like that. I just gravitated towards it naturally. And then as I grew older, I read every nature book I could find. And when I went to college, I didn't know what to do. At that time, there was no environmental studies degree to get at UWO, which was also my alma mater. So I went to biology and eventually became a biology major and graduated with an emphasis in zoology. And then went on for my master's degree in ecology when I found out about a trip to the tropical rainforest down in Panama. And and then when I graduated, I worked for the DNR in fisheries and a few other programs as an LTE, and then went on for my PhD in aquatic ecology, coming back to teach at UWO in 2006.
What did that feel like?
To keep going there.
No, this is great. What did it feel like to return to your alma mater, not as a student, but as a member of the faculty?
It felt like homecoming. I was so happy to be back. I came back to Halsey Science Center. It smelled like home. It felt really, really good to be back.
So tell us about the classes that you teach there and in a sense, what programs of study are available for students at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh?
Well, I came back to teaching in biology at first, and they gave me a class called Ecosphere in Crisis, which I taught those labs. And I found that my students were very disconnected from nature. Very few of them had ever had an environmental science class. And the things I was teaching were very basic. I was surprised to find a lot of my students didn't know anything about basic concepts of air and water pollution. My students didn't understand exactly where their food came from or where their electricity comes from, where their water comes from, where their waste goes. And so from there on, I made it my mission to connect my college students with nature, with their resources, and to understand the tax on the environment that their lifestyle choices have.
One of the things I want to ask you about before we get into the whole connecting with nature thing is a couple of things that you are active in. And one of them, according to your credentials at UW Oshkosh, is that you are the coordinator of Clean Boats, Clean Waters. Tell us about this program.
Well, I was the coordinator for about 7 years. I was in charge of a crew of students each year, ranging from 7 to 15 students each year. And our mission was to deploy all around the Lake Winnebago system and talk to patrons on the water about stopping the spread of invasive species. We are also looking for invasive species because if you find them early, then you have a more likelihood of stopping them. So it was an educational outreach program that I had very much enjoyed working with.
You are also an affiliate of something called SIRT, S-I-R-T, the Sustainability Institute for Regional Transformations. My understanding is that was founded about 5 years ago. Tell us what that is.
The Sustainability Institute for Regional Transformation is basically a department that works to bring in sustainability events onto campus. So I do that in many different ways. I organize events in relation to water quality and campus health, in particular looking at the native plantings on campus. Also as part of that, I work with student clubs. I work with the Student Environmental Action Coalition, where we organize different events for students to do a variety of things with environmental action. And I also work with a student beekeeping club, Sustainable Beekeeping Club, where we are working on BeeCampus USA, where in order to become BeeCampus USA, you have to reduce your use of pesticides and have native plantings and have educational outreach programs and invite the community onto campus. So all sorts of just a wonderful array of programs and experiences for students and to also have the community come onto campus.
I find all of that really, really impressive. Would it be fair to say that UW Oshkosh is exceptional among the universities of the Wisconsin system in terms of this rich array of offerings and opportunities? Or at least as far as you know, is this comparable to what one would find at other UW campuses?
Yeah, actually, UWO is, we do capitalize on having a very strong environmental studies program. We are award-winning in sustainability. I believe we won a Green Ribbon Award a couple of years ago. We have a very strong program. We have a lot of environmental studies majors that are a close-knit group. They go on trips every year and have all sorts of fun things, and also internships, and yeah, just it's a wonderful program, and it is actually little known among the campuses about our strong environmental studies program.
For those of you just joining us, this is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and we're happy to have joining us via the telephone Shannon Davis-Faust, Senior Lecturer in Biology and Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, and presenter of a special course called Finding Your Connection with Nature, which we're going to be talking about next. Nan Calvert, I imagine your eyes must be lighting up as you hear about all of these different offerings at UW-Oshkosh. It sort of bodes well for the future, doesn't it?
Because when we think about environmental studies and all that that encompasses, we often think of UW-Stevens Point. And so I'm elated to hear that UW-Oshkosh has a very strong environmental ethic as well, and hopefully that ethic will spread throughout the UW system. We know that UW Parkside is doing a wonderful job, not too far from here, actually, with their restoration projects specifically focused on the return and then the conservation of the rusty patched bumblebee, but other native pollinators as well. So good on UW systems. That's what I say.
Right. Great to see this, all of this happening. Well, let's now talk more specifically, first of all, kind of in general about this notion of people connecting with nature, and then specifically this course that is offered to the public a couple of months from now called Finding Your Connection with Nature. So first of all, Shannon Davis-Faust, tell us a little bit about when it first occurred to you that talking about this in this way and maybe even designing courses around this whole notion of connecting with nature would be an important thing to do.
Well, as I had continued on my teaching journey at UWO, I was charged with finding a way to get my students to do experiential learning, a community service per se, but it was community service with a learning component. And so I got my college students working with elementary kids, and I called it the Nature Connection Program, and that was about 10 years ago when I started that. And I saw magic happen when I did that. I created lesson plans that were designed for about 24 college students to go and work with a class or two of elementary students, so somewhere between 24 to about maybe 50 elementary students at a time in between the grades of third grade through fifth grade. And it works beautifully with a breakdown of almost, you know, one-to-one or one-to-two instruction with the college students to the elementary students. And the teachers that I would talk with about it, they absolutely love the program. And it's what started there about 10 years ago with my Nature Connection program. And my students contribute to a blog that I keep online where they just write short accounts of what it was like working with the kids. I try to capture cute things that the kids say, lots of fun exclamations as they make discoveries in nature. And like I said before, it's watching magic happen before your eyes, because not only do the elementary students discover things, but the college students do as well. It's growth on both ends, and the elementary teachers are also learning right alongside of us. But sadly, I've also, as I've talked to the elementary school teachers, I've seen that some of them are literally afraid to take their kids outside. They've confessed to me that they themselves don't know much about the environment around them, and they don't feel confident in guiding their students outside. And one of the important things that I expressed to them is that you don't have to be an expert on nature to take the kids outside. You can just guide them through. I notice to make observations. I wonder to ask questions about those observations, and then to grow from that by saying, well, I think that maybe, you know, being able to relate to other things that you know about. And literally, this is the foundation of science. So you can take the kids outside and get them connected with nature, get them to be healthier by being outside. There's so much science that shows that you're healthier being outside. But at the same time, you're meeting a STEM goal. You're meeting some of the standards for education in terms of science, because it is literally a foundation of science to make observations and to ask questions about your observations. And you don't have to be an expert. You don't need to know the name of a single tree or plant or anything. You can just go outside, enjoy it, and ask questions and make observations and just be, you know, just guide them in this thought process. And it's a beautiful thing. It is truly, truly magical. My students, by the way, are not all education majors. Many of them are business majors and all sorts of music majors and art majors. And so a lot of them don't even have an education emphasis, and yet they're able to guide the elementary students. And I also have to say, sometimes the elementary students know more than the college students. So the college students will come back to me and say, wow, I just learned a lot from that little kid. So it really is magical. So moving on then, I'm sorry, so you want me to talk about the class that's coming up?
Sure.
Okay, so realizing that it's very important for children to connect with nature, absolutely. In fact, there's an important window that that children should be connected with nature, but at the same time, adults need time with nature. In fact, in European countries, the doctors can prescribe nature. And in Japan, they have a long-standing tradition of forest bathing. So there's a lot of cultures that have already very good connections with nature, which seems to be largely missing in the United States. So I had started a pilot class this last summer. I was working with a small group called Pop Earth out of the Fox Valley, and they were asking me what would I like to teach, because there's a lot of different things I teach. And I said, I really would like to teach a nature connection class with adults. And actually, it was adults and some younger, I would say, well, children that were probably middle school age and above. So I started this is Finding Your Connection with Nature, just a few-hour afternoon class. And I got wonderful, wonderful feedback from it. They went out themselves and made observations, and they drew their observations. By drawing and journaling your observations, it forces you to focus more and take a closer look. And then they would come back and share with a partner, and it was a lot of fun. So now with this upcoming class, I would like to, this is going to be a longer class, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it'll be similar in the sense that they're going to be set up on missions to make observations in nature, make connections, and coming back to the group and sharing what they find. And also on top of that, with the journaling, creating a story behind their nature observations. And so with that, we're connecting. We're really focusing in on what's around us in the natural world. And the people that take this class, you know, this is by choice. And so with that strength coming in, I expect the group will be quite synergistic and be a lot of fun. The people that gravitate towards environmental experiences like this are just the most wonderful people, the most wholesome and dedicated people to being stewards of the world. And that's the class in a nutshell.
That's great. One of the things that occurred to me as I was first, you know, looking at the course description and so on, is who this is primarily designed for. And sometimes when things like this get put together, it's really kind of designed for the city slicker that most desperately needs to connect with nature, maybe for the first time in their lives, who just has never had this kind of experience. I'm not sure, in fact, this is that sort of experience. It sounds like this is something for people who perhaps already care about nature and understand it, but are really hungry for an experience in which they can connect even more deeply. Or is it simplistic to say that it's one or the other?
Well, everyone is invited to attend. When I led the short course this past summer, I think it was more just kind of people kind of curious, people that were, you know, maybe somewhat interested in nature. I expect, but I don't know for sure, that most of the people that will sign up for this course coming up in January are already more heavily engaged in the natural world. But all the same, a lot of the people that I do work with through the Wild Ones program are people that are interested but still have a long ways to go. And watching their growth has been so much fun too, as they gain more knowledge about the natural world around them. And you ask more questions. And the beauty of it all is that you can never know all of it. There's as a student of the natural environment, you can never know everything. And that's what keeps you going. And that's a very good thing that we cannot know everything. So even if I have students that are already nature experts or students that are just coming in for the first time, there's plenty for everybody. There's no limitations there.
I suppose one of the beauties of this as well is that because the natural world, the natural environment is not a static thing, I mean, it's not quite the same as going and looking at Mount Rushmore, and Mount Rushmore is essentially Mount Rushmore exactly the same, unchanging day after day after day. But the natural environment, by its very nature, pardon the pun, is an ever-evolving thing, and you never know exactly what it is that you're going to experience. So in a sense, one could take a course like this repeatedly and continue to experience new things. At least theoretically, that seems like that would be the case.
No, absolutely. Especially if you're focusing in on tiny details. I mean, there's just no limit to the different things you can focus in on. And then if you come back to the same place repeatedly, it's changing over time as well. So you could be coming back to the same thing to see how it changes over time.
Tell us more about the place where this course in early January is going to be taking place.
Yeah, this course is going to be held up at a place that is nicknamed Lowen Wood. It is also known as the Old Conserve School. That was a semester school for high school students for almost 20 years. It had been owned by a man named Lowen Wood, who had left a trust behind to build this beautiful campus up in Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. And recently, it was closed down as a semester school, and it was opened up to different groups, especially the universities, but other groups as well, to have events. And the only stipulation is that it has to be education-based. And of course, with respect for the property, and so that's the property. It's this beautiful campus up in Land O'Lakes, the very tip of the northern tip of Wisconsin, and it is just beautiful. If I can use the word pristine, which nothing is truly pristine, but it is the beautiful lakes all over the property, of miles and miles of hiking trails. It's just a fantastic place to go to really immerse yourself in nature with nice accommodations, very comfortable accommodations with hot water on demand and good Wi-Fi.
There you go. So what is involved physically in taking this course, and what do people need to think about in terms of their own physical abilities and or limitations?
We can accommodate pretty much anyone. In terms of going out to observe nature, you could step right outside the door. Nature is everywhere. You can look at your sidewalk cracks. So they don't have to go very far. It's their choice. They can go and search far and wide for what they want to take a closer look at in nature. There will be lots of time for just exploring on your own. And that's what it's all about. It's not only a class, a course, but it's also a retreat where part of the intent is to regain some of our mental health and just silence, so tame the monkey mind and get out and just relax and connect, meditate with nature. So there's very little physical demand. You can go as far as you want to.
And what about if somebody is on crutches or a cane or in a wheelchair or that kind of thing? I mean, should they be at least kind of thinking twice about this or not?
Yeah, like I said, we can accommodate anybody. There are accommodations for wheelchairs and, it's as far as steps go, anything like that, anybody can be fully accommodated.
Very good.
You know, I was thinking about doing this sort of thing in January up north in Wisconsin, and there are those people who think that during the wintertime, nothing is actually happening out there in the natural world. But in point of fact, nothing could be further from the truth. It's a wonderful time to get out there and explore, observe, experience. You can really get to see the character of trees because they don't have leaves, and you can see the shapes that the species tend to take. You can draw them in your nature journal. You can listen to birds. There's still birds out there. We have lots of birds that stay here in the wintertime. It's a wonderful time to get out there and explore. So don't let the time of year put you off. It's a great thing to do.
Yes, thank you, Nan. And also, I have to mention the animal tracks. The animal track—that's the beauty of going out when there's a snowfall—is being able to look at the animal tracks and try to figure out the story behind those tracks.
So, tell us about the sort of the writing element of this, how that works, and in a sense, what people tend to gain from that.
Yes. So a couple of years ago, I started to encourage more writing with my students, and the reasons being is there's many, many scientific reasons that show that by writing, it's aiding your memory, it's forcing you to focus more closely at what you're looking at or what you're studying. It also allows you to summarize and look back and put together big ideas by seeing everything compiled over time. So it's a tremendous tool. I've found over time now that some people shy away, like, oh, journaling, I don't want to do that. But it's a tool that I think is not utilized as much as it should be. So the nature journaling is meant to be fun, and I give my students lots of flexibility in how they want to approach journaling. If they want to make it primarily written, I do encourage drawing, even if you're not an artist, because drawing does help you look at those fine details and shapes and colors and textures that you might just gloss over otherwise if you weren't forced to try to recreate it on a piece of paper. Nature journaling is very healthy. I actually have a very thick book sitting right next to me that is all about nature journaling and the different exercises you can do with nature journaling.
Very good. So this course, of course, takes place rain or shine or snow or shine. How much would you anticipate the matter of weather and Mother Nature affecting what kind of experience people would be likely to have in a course like that? I mean, how much difference does that tend to make?
Well, of course, being in the winter, there's concern that the weather won't cooperate with us. If there is a blizzard over this time period, then we would have to cancel the class. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for good weather. And if we have storms, there's always windows and bird feeders and ways to attract wildlife and still be able to connect. And just being able to connect with each other too, to realize that connection is with nature and with each other. It has those two strengths, and people oftentimes do bond over nature experiences. So No matter what we're left with, as long as the class doesn't get canceled due to weather, it will be a fulfilling course, and you will connect in some ways, in one way or the other.
Anything else you want to add about what this course promises to offer to people?
Well, I think it's going to be one of the most fantastic experiences. You can't beat the price. And it's at the top of Wisconsin, at the top of the year, and I guarantee it will be a fulfilling course. You will come away with it just feeling more relaxed and content with the experience, and probably longing for more, as often is the case.
Nan, anything else you want to add about this course and what it promises to the people participating?
Actually, I'd like to ask Professor Davis-Faust, she mentioned briefly there's a window of time for children to most effectively connect with nature. Could you talk about that a little bit for us, please?
Oh, yes, I'm very happy to. So, that, as I had mentioned before with my college students, I found that many of them are very well disconnected from nature, and as Nan had said at the very beginning of the program, apathetic towards environmental issues. Thank you so much for this question. And so when you teach environmental literacy, it's more than just knowledge. That knowledge, when you're truly achieving environmental literacy, that knowledge affects how people feel, and you start to gain a true affinity for what's around you. And if you don't have that knowledge and you don't have those nature experiences, and you know, we're surrounded by those four walls and ceiling, and that's your identity. When you're whatever you're surrounded by and you're engaged with in the world, and when you are young, they say around the ages of 4 to 7, there's this window that you're creating your own self identity. And if you have very few nature experiences, you have less identity with the natural world, and it's like speaking a language. If you learn a different language when you're in this window of about ages 4 to 7, you are more likely to be highly fluent in that language. Whereas if you learn, you know, if you study a language when you're older, you are less likely to be fluent in that language. It isn't part of you. So this window is crucial for kids to have experiences in the natural world. And if they don't, as part of environmental literacy, it's the knowledge, it affects how you feel, and how you feel then affects what you do, your relationship with the environment, and makes good environmental stewards in the future if you've achieved environmental literacy.
I love that whole notion. It's of course, more important than ever that this is fostered in young people and fostered in the rest of us to whatever extent that's possible. And of course, this course that we've been talking about is especially important as an opportunity to foster and deepen that connection with nature. So explain to our listeners, if they are intrigued by this opportunity, what they need to do in order to partake of this opportunity. And maybe as you're doing so, remind them of exactly when and where it is occurring.
Yes, very happy to do so. Thank you, Greg. So it is from January 5th, which is a Friday at noon, to noon on Sunday, January 7th. To enroll in the class, you need to go to, there's a couple different places you can go. You can go to the Wild Ones Fox Valley Area Chapter website. If you Google Wild Ones Fox Valley Area, you'll find the website, and you will find a list of courses. We have the Wisconsin Native Plant Certification Program, where you can take 50 hours of classes and get your certificate with us in native plants. And this course is one of those, but you don't have to be trying to get the certificate or even be a Wild Ones member to take this class. So if you go there, you'll find the course description, and then there'll be a link into Eventbrite, and then you can register through Eventbrite. It's $200 for non-members, and that includes all of your lodging and food from this time period, from noon on January 5th to noon on January 7th, and it's $170 for Wild Ones members, so you save $30 if you are a Wild Ones member. You can also just search for the class through Eventbrite directly if you like.
Hmm. And I understand the deadline for registration is December 18th. So people should be considering this opportunity now.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. All right. Well, Shannon Davis-Faust, we really appreciate this opportunity to connect with you and to hear all about this particular course and all the other good things that you and your colleagues are doing at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, where you are a senior lecturer in biology and environmental studies. We appreciate you making time for this conversation today on The Morning Show and wish you well.
Thank you so much, Greg and Nan, for your invitation and this opportunity to speak. It's my pleasure.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you again. Bye-bye. Well, that was a fun conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, I hope a lot of people sign up for the course. It's going to be well worth it, and it's beautiful there, absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Right. So something to keep in mind, finding your connection with nature. So before we finish out, I know you want to tell our listeners about a couple of things that are coming up.
Well, we here in the local region can find our connections with nature pretty easily. And of course, the holiday season is upon us. And so to begin with, the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center will be inviting you to attend a wonderful class on November 18th from 9 o'clock in the morning until 11:30. And you will join Sister Janet Weicker and learn how to make needle felted Santas.
Oh.
They're really gorgeous. Sister Janet is just a master felter. Lots of fun will be had. Just go to the website to register. It is $30 per person. It's appropriate for people 12 years and onward. Minors have to be accompanied by an adult. And then this annual event that so many people have come to love and attend is Hawthorne Hollow's Holiday Boutique and Bakery, Saturday, December 2nd from 9 until 3 p.m. There will be handcrafted wreaths and swags, freshly cut greens, baked goods, how yummy, and other gifts. So go and shop and support Hawthorne Hollow, hike the trails. You know, they have new trails. It's very beautiful. If you're not really interested in shopping, then you can lend a hand. You can be a volunteer baker. You can help make decorations like the wreaths and the swags. There's all kinds of things to do. Just go to the website, click on the hypertext links for baked goods and greens crafting, and you can become a volunteer. It doesn't matter whether you shop or you volunteer or you do both. It's a terrific way to support Hawthorne Hollow, a great organization in our community, and celebrate the holidays in a really meaningful way.
Right. My wife and I have done this more than once, mm-hmm. and it really is a whole lot of fun and a lovely event in many, many ways. So, Nan Covert, thank you so much for today, and we look forward to seeing you in December.
Yes, I shall be back in December. Thank you so much.
You bet. This is The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. My next Morning Show guest is Sahara Rose Katabi, and she has put together a beautiful book which introduces us to what she calls the world's most ancient health system. And it is something that emerged from the nation of India over 5,000 years ago, Ayurveda. And it is something that has made a huge difference for the better in her own life and health. And she has taken some of these ancient practices and tried to give them, in a sense, a modern twist, a modern perspective. And she introduces all of this in a lovely new book called Eat, Feel Fresh, a contemporary plant-based Ayurvedic cookbook. And we have Sahara Rose Katabi with us to talk about this this new book and all that she has done in this particular movement. Sahara Rose Katabi, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you really take care to explain to us that this term Ayurveda is not a diet. It is something bigger than that. You call it a health system and a very, very old one, which in some respects has some connotation with the much better known term yoga. Explain what Ayurveda is and also its relationship to yoga, which I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of.
Yeah, so Ayurveda is the ancient Indian health system that is the sister science of yoga. So yoga that we practice
for physical or mental reasons. If you're going to a yoga class to deal with your anxiety or to get more flexible, really it's Ayurveda that you're practicing. So the word Ayurveda means the knowledge of life, and it is essentially the predecessor of yoga. It is the balance of your mind and your body so you can practice yoga, which is really a spiritual practice. So Ayurveda has to do with nutrition, diet, self-care, philosophy, spirituality, anything related to balancing the mind and body is related to Ayurveda, and yoga is a spiritual practice.
One of the things that is interesting is how you use the word science to describe Ayurveda, and I don't think you're using science exactly in the way that we sometimes think of as modern science, but you use that term more than once. How are you using the term science as it specifically relates to Ayurveda?
Yeah, so Ayurveda actually is a science. It's actually where surgery comes from, herbology comes from, Chinese medicine, Western medicine, all has roots in Ayurveda. They were the first people ever to see that plants are truly contain different phytonutrients that can heal off different diseases. So when you go to India and you visit an Ayurvedic doctor, they've undergone just as extensive medical training as a Western doctor. So it really is a science. But this science is not just one that is shown in labs. It's not one that uses chemicals to replace ingredients with. It is one that looks at nature for our solutions.
One of the things you tell us about Ayurveda is that from a very early point in history, those who practiced it and in a sense created it, were very much concerned with digestion. And it's really interesting to think about people thousands of years ago being aware of and thinking about digestion very specifically. Explain how digestion itself has been a hallmark of Ayurvedic practices over the centuries.
Yes. In Ayurveda, they say it's not you are what you eat, but you are what you digest. So digestion is really the cornerstone of all health. Digestion is what allows us to take those delicious kale smoothies and superfood salads that we eat and actually turn them into nourishment for the body. So if you're not digesting something, not only are you not using all of the nutrients that it has, you're actually creating toxins in your system. So it's so important that we have a healthy and strong digestion, because as we know, when our digestive system is out of whack, we don't feel as happy. And we now know from studies that 95% of our serotonin, our happiness hormone, is stored in our gut. So having a healthy digestion is the key to a healthy and balanced mind.
You also use a term that I think a lot of us have seen, but that we don't maybe necessarily understand, particularly as it relates to the food we take into our bodies. Talk about the term alkaline and what a difference it makes in terms of what kind of food we choose to make the cornerstone of our diet.
Yes. So foods can either make us more alkaline or more acidic. And most of us in today's Western culture are more acidic because we're eating a lot of refined, processed, saturated, chemical, sugar, junk foods, essentially. So these foods are going to make our bodies more acidic, which makes them more prone to diseases. Diseases can actually only thrive in an acidic environment. So alkaline foods are fruits, they're vegetables, they're foods that naturally grow from the earth. And the more alkaline our body, the better able we are to combat diseases and be productive and really fulfill our purposes here on this planet.
Mm. So explain how you have taken some of these ancient practices of Ayurveda and made them, in a sense, more modern when it comes to making specific choices about food. In what way have you maybe slightly altered or refined some of the more ancient ideas about diet within this Ayurvedic system?
Yes. So in ancient India, they obviously did not have refrigerators. So for them, they said, don't eat food that was cooked more than 3 hours ago. And that made total sense in that time, because if food was left out in 120-degree India, it would have gone bad. But now we have refrigeration, we have containers that we can safely store our meals in. So I believe meal prep is something that we all can really benefit from. Most of us are not home, and we can create a meal that can last us for the next 2 to 3 days to lessen our cooking time. I've also made it plant-based. So traditionally, Ayurveda contains a lot of dairy products because they knew they needed a healthy fat, but they didn't have access to avocados and oil distillation processes. So for them, they had cows going around everywhere. So to use the milk of that cow and then use the ghee, which is the clarified butter of that cow, was their form of healthy fat. And that was the best option they had at this time. But now we have coconut oil, sesame oil, avocado, flax seeds, hemp seeds, all of these other incredible choices that we can replace the dairy products with. And with all of the factory farming and the different hormones going into our milk, I think it's better that we shift towards a more plant-based style of living.
Hmm. I'd love to have you outline a couple of important hallmarks of your book. And one of them is that you outline the six tastes of Ayurveda. Explain what these six tastes are and why it is important to keep these in mind as one sort of constructs whatever sort of personal diet you would want to draw from this.
Yes. The six tastes of Ayurveda are sweet, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, and astringent. So these tastes will essentially balance out your nutritional needs so you no longer crave foods. So the reason why lots of us go on a diet and then a week later are dreaming about brownies and cake and cookies and bread is because we cut out the sweet taste. So our body is naturally wanting something sweet, so it goes to the most over-the-top form, which is pure sugar, whereas if we had been consuming something like a sweet potato, we would have not had that same craving. So eating these six tastes every day is a really easy way of making sure you're getting all of the nutrients that you need without having to count calories and really looking at food as a number, which is what we've been trained to do, what I was trained to do in my sports nutrition certification, but food is something that is meant to be enjoyed, and we're supposed to have these six tastes every day, and that's why they each contain different nutritional properties.
Mm. Your book goes on to outline all kinds of interesting information, including 11 tenets for health, some of which people will recognize, and others will be probably new to them. You outline what's important to have on your spice rack, ways to use onion and garlic in wonderful and interesting ways, basics on how to prepare important sauces and other condiments, and of course a whole host of amazing recipes. How usable are the recipes for the typical American? I mean, is the typical American using this book going to be able to find the ingredients that are outlined in so many of these intriguing recipes?
Yes, and that is exactly who I created this book for. I wanted someone to walk into your regular grocery store and be able to find all of the ingredients needed for a recipe. So they're delicious, they're healthy, they're affordable, and they're accessible. I use things like oats, sweet potatoes, different vegetables you can find at your local farmer's market, things that are available and accessible to every single person, because you don't need to go order a whole new rack of spices that you use once and never use again. And it's all about integrating them little by little, taking something that you love like a pizza or a Southwestern salad, and how can you use more, maybe throw in some cumin in there, throw in some ginger in there, so you're not, trying this new diet and giving it up, which we've all done too many times in the past, but you're able to take the foods that you're eating on a daily basis, the ingredients you're familiar with that your family already loves and is easily able to afford, and upgrading that.
Mm. Well, it's an amazing book, and there are all kinds of intriguing recipes in here of every facet of a typical meal, from marvelous looking smoothies to incredible salads and much, much more, and beautiful full color illustrations as well. The book is published by Alpha. Again, it's titled Eat, Feel Fresh. The author, Sahara Rose Khatabi. Sahara Rose Khatabi, thank you so much for joining me on the morning show, and best wishes to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, Tom Clavin, the author of a book called The Last Outlaws, The Desperate Final Days of the Dalton Gang. It's a wonderful look at the waning days of what we think of as the Old West. Next week, some exceptionally interesting interviews. On Monday, John Clinch, the author of a novel called The General and Julia, a historic novel, really, based on the final days of Ulysses S. Grant as he struggled to finish the memoirs that he hoped would make his family's